What if most of us have a what if question in our lives? What if I'd chosen a different career? Or what if I'd had the courage to ask somebody out? Well, Devin Michael's what if is on a galactic scale. In 1999, he was one of three child actors chosen out of a pool of 3,000 to play the part of the young Anakin Skywalker, who would later become Darth Vader. That was for the movie Star Wars, The Phantom Menace. Devin auditioned at Skywalker Ranch, but in the end he didn't get the part. Jake Lloyd did. And Devin Michael is now a writer and author. His What If is the subject of a new short documentary called Almost Famous, The Unchosen One. And Devin joins me now from Vancouver, Canada. Hello there.
Hello.
Thanks for sharing your story. How did you first get started in acting?
Ooh, well, my big brother, who obviously is my favorite person in the whole world, when I was a little boy, he's 8.5 years older than me, he got into being an actor. He really, really, really loved it. He wanted to be in film and on TV. And so after begging my mother for quite a long time, she found him an agent, and he started auditioning. He started getting some parts. And I was just a little guy at the time. But I was there and I was cute, and the agency asked if I'd try it, and I did, and I loved it.
Was acting seen in a way as a ticket to a better life for your family?
No, for the family, no. No, never. It was really a passion of Jordan's, and then it became a passion of mine. When you're a little kid, you know, I don't think you really realize the idea of celebrity, the idea of fame or riches wasn't really a part of the conversation. It was just the coolest thing you could do after school, you know?
Did you enjoy it being on set, working with people like George Clooney on ER?
Oh my goodness, yes. Oh, it was the best. I mean, the professionalism of a film set is something that I've never seen since being on a film set. Everybody wants to be there, and every single person is very good at what they do. So it's inspiring. It was very inspiring, even when I was small, to be around everybody working in unison. And of course, there's always problems on set. There's always somebody that's having some kind of a panic episode somewhere. But for the most part, it's very positive work environment.
That was a really full-on part you had on ER, by the way, an abused boy accused of harming your brother. That must be a bit of an emotional weight for a kid taking a role on like that.
You know, that's one of the contributing reasons why I stopped acting eventually. I kept getting the same sort of role over and over again. I think there was a maturity that I had as a really young person where I could play, and I was a little blonde, dimpled kid, right? But I could do that dark expression. So I kept being that kid over and over again, abused and working with actors. And, you know, when a grown man on set like ER has to pick you up and scream in your face, it's, even though it's acting, it's still really real, really close up. That was a little bit of a weight. Yeah, that was a little intense sometimes. Even when you know it's a scene, you're still a kid.
And so on this documentary, you tweeted about it. You said forthcoming, possibly inspiring, intimate, nerve-wracking, hopefully not narcissistic. The exhaustive efforts of the director Ben Proudfoot and Breakwater Studios telling a story I didn't want to ever tell until I met these filmmakers. So why did you decide it was okay to revisit this chapter in your story?
Well, I met Ben Proudfoot. I talked to him on Zoom. I'm a freelance writer, right? So if somebody asks you, hey, do you want to do something? You go, yeah, of course. And then you worry about it later. That's sort of the rule of the industry.
Sure.
And it wasn't something that I was excited to do or really wanted to revisit, no. But then I talked to him about what it is that he wanted to accomplish. And he said, I want to make this the kind of story that's going to inspire people. I want to talk about Star Wars. I don't really need to know any kind of dirt or gossipable pieces of information about anybody. I want to make something that's valuable to people. And I don't know. I liked that. He got me. Like, okay, we can make something that's really neat and inspiring to people. I'm in. Let's do it. Let's see what we can do.
I mean, people have been tricked by that pitch before, right? Carol Baskin thought they were making a nice documentary about tigers and was very disappointed in how it ended up. So good that Ben was true to his word, right?
Oh, it was magnificent. I also got to see the other pieces in the series, Almost Famous, because there's eight of them now, I think. I got to see the first four that New York Times commissioned, and watching those, realizing what kind of a filmmaker he was and Breakwater Studios was, and the mission there to create human interest stories. Yeah.
How did you find out you were going to audition for a Star Wars movie?
Oh, I just got into the car one day and my mom said, "Hey, you're going to go out for Star Wars."
Were you aware
Yeah.
of what a big deal the franchise was? I mean, the first movie came out 10 years before you were born.
Oh yeah, no, I'd memorized the movies. I mean, I could pretty much recite any of the original trilogy at that moment when I got into the car after
Wow.
school and found out I was going out for Star Wars.
So what's that audition process like to get from 3,000 to 3?
Gosh, well, it was the most unusual audition process I went through. Usually you go in and you read a couple lines in front of a casting director or a camera, and that's it. This one, the woman, I believe her name was Robin. I really enjoyed the way that she went about it. You got into the room and she'd just spend about maybe what felt like a half hour, but I think maybe 5 or 10 minutes just talking with you. So that went, I think, two or three rounds where I would just go and sit and talk to Robin, and wasn't aware of the magnitude of how many kids were going out for these auditions. It looked like any normal audition room, in my experience. And then eventually found out, hey, yeah, so in lieu of the final stage, which is usually going to producers or meeting the director or something in a room, this was okay, we're going to go to George Lucas's ranch and have George direct you and the other finalists in a scene with Natalie Portman on Skywalker Ranch.
Hi, my name is Devin Michael, and I'm 9 years old.
I'm a pilot, and someday I'm gonna fly away from this place.
You're a pilot?
All my life.
You're just a little boy.
I won't always be.
One of
Were
a
you
kind of an audition.
yeah, better than Disneyland, I imagine. Did you eye
Oh
up the
my
other two
goodness.
contenders when you met them for the first time?
Oh no. I'd seen, I think, both of them in other work, and I'd seen Michael and Girano around casting rooms. They were peers and colleagues, not the other kids on Got Talent or whatever. It wasn't a game show. It was me and two boys were getting to go to Star Wars land together. It was absolutely magic for all of us. We all knew Star Wars, and we were the three lucky boys who got the golden tickets to go to Willy Wonka's factory. It was good fun. It was really good fun being with those guys.
Had you put a lot of thought into how to play the boy who's going to become Darth Vader?
I think I knew what the character meant to me pretty straight off the bat. And then hearing George speak about, George didn't really direct us to any particular degree. He was more looking for the kid who was already Anakin in his mind. So when we got there, the direction was as simple as, okay, he's a little slave boy who lives on Tatooine. You all know what Tatooine is. And that was my understanding of the character via George. But I also knew that he was going to grow up to be Darth Vader, and that to me meant being that kid who was a slave, which maybe meant something different to me than George, but somebody who had a really, really tough life and an emotional maturity that would come through even though he was just a child.
Your line at the audition is delivered so differently from the other two. Can you remember the reaction to it and maybe what your mum said to you afterwards?
There was, so in the audition tapes, there's one particular scene that made it into that short documentary. So she says, "You're just a little boy," and then you say, "I won't always be." And there were several other lines after the, I think, let's see, about, it must have been 45 minutes or an hour of scenes, easily, that we were all doing individually. After the whole round of scenes, and especially after the very last scene that we shot, was actually one that didn't make it into the documentary featurette. It was Anakin saying goodbye to his mother, Shmi, I think was that character's name. you're saying, will I ever see you again? And having that devastating, heart-wrenching conversation. So after all of those scenes, getting out of the audition room, out of the sound studio, my mother looked at me and she said, wow, you know, everybody in the room was really emotionally impacted by the time you left. Some people looked like they were crying. That was pretty special. Especially when you're a little kid, being able to affect that kind of reaction from a bunch of adults, you know, who work in cinema.
I'm talking to writer and author Devin Michael. He made the shortlist to play Anakin Skywalker, the very shortlist, in Star Wars, The Phantom Menace. And now a documentary is out telling his story and what happened afterwards. The documentary is called Almost Famous, The Unchosen One. We've got a link to it on our website. So again, I'm really appreciative that you're talking to us about this time, which is, you know, pretty full-on time for you. And I guess the big question is, why do you think they picked Jake Lloyd over you?
Well, there's a lot to be said about it. First and foremost, Jake Lloyd was a very, very good young actor. He really, really, really was. At the end of the day, it came down to George's decision. George Lucas had absolute final say in the prequels. And I believe, and this is very much speculation, obviously, but I think that George really knew exactly what he wanted before we even showed up there. He knew how the boy looked, how the boy sounded in his mind. Obviously, as the storyteller, that's kind of your job, isn't it? Yeah. So when he saw Jake, it was exactly who he had in mind, you know? And casting isn't necessarily a meritocracy, so no. Who was better isn't really the question, you know? He was Anakin in as far as he saw him, and Jake was good, even though he wasn't treated very well for it. He was good. He was really good.
Yeah, you're talking about fan reaction. And for most other parts, you could take the decision and move on, and maybe you wouldn't end up watching the TV show or the movie that you'd missed out on for a while. But this is Star Wars, hey? You can't escape it.
No, you certainly can't. No, yeah, it was unfortunate. It was sad. Obviously, I was very sad not to be able to be a part of this. But you know, being able to dress up as a young Jedi and hang out on Tatooine and Naboo, just it still gives me goosebumps thinking about. I could have seen it, could have been there, I could have gone. But when I was a little kid, yeah, it was everywhere. It's always everywhere. But when The Phantom Menace came out, that was one of the most hyped up movies of all time, you know? The return to the largest franchise in film history. So it was everywhere. It was absolutely everywhere when I was 9.
You've had plenty of time to think about this, Devin. Do we live in a world where you have to be either winner or loser?
Well, me personally, no, I don't think so. See, there's a fascination with best, right? Even watching the Olympics, I always wondered, people get a silver or bronze medal and they feel like they've lost. And this is astonishing to me. We convince ourselves that the only thing worth having is the one perfect, being the best in the world. But being the best at anything, the winner at anything, is always fleeting and, you know, conditional. It doesn't, I don't know. It is an odd obsession. I think we would all be better off relaxing our grip on.
Probably a pretty important lesson for all of us to learn, but maybe you got an early glimpse of it or were taught it early.
Gosh, I'd say I was. I'd say I was. When I, being 9 and losing out on the part of a lifetime, right? That definitely informed me as an adult, sure.
And Star Wars fans look up everything. They just got an unquenchable thirst for Star Wars-based material. And a lot of them, watched this behind-the-scenes documentary at the time about the casting process. Did it help at all that they loved you? And a lot of them thought you should have been the one.
I suppose so. I mean, the support for me was nice. It's always nice to hear when people think that you were really good, but there was also kind of a rage about it, which was unsettling. So the support was lovely. People saying, man, you were really good. And then people saying, oh, I hated that other kid, or you're better than him, or whatever. That kind of takes the kindness out of it and turns it into something else, something a little darker.
It's amazing what people are willing to say about a 9-year-old boy. Newsweek magazine ran a review saying he stinks. In fact, Ron Howard was so incensed by that, he used to be a child actor himself, that he actually wrote a letter to them, right? An angry letter saying that it was irresponsible to talk about a 9-year-old boy like that.
Oh, I hadn't read that letter. I'm going to have to go look that up. Yeah, Ron Howard having a lifetime career, he would obviously be the person to write them, because he would know, and most people don't really think about it. Because that's part of the thing when you go to the movies, you go to a film, what's the first thing you do when you get out of the movie theater? You go and you talk to your friends and you say, I love this actor. I hate that actor. The cinematography was great. You have no idea what cinematography means. You don't know what that job is, but that's the thing, having opinions. And that's fine. And it's wonderful to have opinions. That's what entertainment is. It's being able to talk about it with your friends and dish and discuss. But, you know, if we're not thinking about it, it becomes carried away. To tell a 9-year-old they're crap, that's not okay.
And he had a tough time of it. Talked about being bullied at school. His mother has told the press he suffers from mental illness. He found himself in trouble with the police. This is Jake Lloyd, the boy who eventually played Anakin. Do you feel like you have a unique perspective, or what is your perspective on why so many child actors don't manage to make it out of Hollywood unscathed?
I don't know. I don't feel like I know enough about that to decide, but it seems to be kind of rampant, doesn't it? The amount of attention that you get and that's, I assume, plays a part in damaging you over time, but I don't know. I don't know enough about that world. I wasn't really a part of it. I was nearby it. I saw a lot of the kids that I knew in casting rooms go through quite a lot. But at the same time, going through the process of becoming an adult, moving from childhood into adulthood, you go through a period of enormous transition. And this is true for everybody. You know, there's even so far as people experiment with being a bad person in order to learn how to be a good person. But most of us do that in private. And when you're a child actor and you're trying to figure out self-definition and your personality and reforming your own ego in a spotlight with cameras on you and people telling you what they think. I mean, imagine trying to go through puberty with a whole bunch of people sitting there giving their opinions to you about yourself. That's got to be confusing. That's got to be hard.
Why did you give it up? Why did you give up acting?
Many reasons. I think first and foremost, I started to get a little tired. I didn't want to be typecast anymore. I didn't want to play the little abused child. It got a little bit repetitive. And I think I needed a break. Not getting the Star Wars role was hard because I had been able to imagine myself being a part of that. And it seemed to me at that age, I couldn't figure out anything else that would even compare to it. I didn't have enough imagination at the time to figure out what else I could do that would get me even close to that experience. So it started to be a little bit duller of a joy. And then also it was at the end of the day, my experience. I wasn't there because my mother wanted me to be an actor. I was there because I wanted to be an actor. And I said to my mom one day, it's like, you know, I think I need to take a break. And she went, okay. And that was it. And I was
good
done. Oh, well, yeah. I mean, again, we were only ever there because we wanted to be. You know, it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy to raise us while also having to take us to Hollywood and, you know, put her entire life kind of on hold for our dreams. I need to take a break from this was a lot.
You have a great way with words, and I love this quote from the documentary. This is you. You say the dark side can happen to anybody, but it depends on how you tell your own story. And maybe that's what the force is, giving yourself permission to see things differently. So Big question to finish with, but what's the story you tell about your life now?
Well, I write that every day, I suppose. Actually, I don't even know how to answer that question, really. I like everything that I do. I really like the choices that I've made and the experiences that I've had. I tend not to try to tell myself who I am. Maybe that's what I mean. I don't want to be defined by the things that may or may not have been. I just simply enjoy, try to tell the best stories that I can and be a good person. I don't know.
You have a particular interest in writing about art, but you're also a fantasy novelist and fiction writer. Can you tell people a bit about the world that you create, particularly in the Hollow series of books?
Oh, yeah. Let's see. Hollow is the beginning of, I think, an anthological series of fantasy stories that I kind of want to do, want to jump around in time and tell a bunch of different characters' stories. But the first one, Hollow, is about a little wooden girl who's a puppet, right? And who can make magic and things happen. So it's a fantasy fairy tale for younger readers, I suppose. But that would be young adults. So young adults at this age means about between about 8 years old and 80, I think. most of the people who get back to me about that story are in their 30s and 40s. Yeah, and there's forthcoming ones. I love it. I love the world.
Hey, well, thanks for telling your story with such humility and vulnerability and courage. And it's really nice to spend some time with you. Good luck for the next chapters of your life, and great to have you on Radio New Zealand today.
Well, it's delightful to talk to you. I appreciate you inviting me over.